Thanks for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and today we start the show by talking about advanced care planning for your future health care needs. And we have a couple of guests for you. Dr. Lee Vogel is one of our guests. She's Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health and an Associate Professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Lee Vogel, welcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being on and having the opportunity to talk.
Well, great to have you with us. Ben Adams is our other guest. He's Emeritus Director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. Ben, great to have you back. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having this topic again during National Healthcare Decisions Week.
Yeah. Ben and Dr. Lee Vogel are both founding members of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. So they have lots of experience in this area. So as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have an advanced care directive. Tell us how that process went, or maybe you're wondering how to get started on one. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Ben, let's just start with you from a legal standpoint. Is advanced care planning legally necessary?
Hi, Larry. Yes, absolutely, especially for those of us who are adults living in Wisconsin. Some states have a law that says if I became incapacitated through a sudden illness or accident, then my wife could step in and make my decisions. And if I wasn't married but I had adult children, those states would generally allow my children, one of them, to step in and be my decision maker without needing any directive. Wisconsin does not have such a law. So in Wisconsin, your next of kin, your nearest relatives, do not have authority to make your medical decisions unless you have signed a valid advance directive document appointing them to be your agents in that situation.
Yeah. Dr. Vogel, just from a medical standpoint, why is it necessary?
Well, I think our end of life can be something that, if thought about, is a situation, even when it comes suddenly or not so suddenly, fraught with, you know, potential for unhappiness for our family members and less than good care for us, because if we haven't communicated what our wishes would be, thought about that, and then we have this legal situation, you can end up not having decisions made that would respect your choice. Your family is uncomfortable. You may not get totally beneficial care because everything might be done in the interest of preserving life, but that may not necessarily be what you wanted or in your best interest.
Yeah, and I can imagine all kinds of arguments among family members about in the moment, you know, it's a high-pressure moment.
It is, and people have different ideas about what a spouse, a parent, an offspring might want, and then there's conflict around that, and everybody's motivated out of love, but if they don't know what you want, it's conflictual.
Ben, you mentioned that this is Healthcare Decisions Week, and Governor Evers had proclaimed the week. Why is it important to for us to recognize advanced care planning for a week and not a day like other events?
Well, traditionally, the last 10 years, April 16th, Larry, as you know, is National and Healthcare Decisions Day in Wisconsin as well. Because, as Ben Franklin said, the only two sure things in life are death and taxes. So it's a reminder to people when you're filing your taxes, you should get your advance directive completed or updated if you've done it some time ago. And Lee mentioned, you know, decisions at end of life as being a very problem-filled issue. But I'd just like to point out that it's not only end-of-life decisions that we're talking about. It's somebody who can be an advocate for you if you're in a situation where you can't speak for yourself. And they have potentially have the authority then, if you need to be transferred out of the hospital to a rehab facility, they have the authority to do that without going through the court process and involving two or three lawyers and a judge and medical evaluations in a guardianship and protective placement process. So it really is a big deal, Larry.
And maybe Dr. Vogel, go to you. Have you noticed any change in the popularity of advanced care directives over time? I mean, is it more popular now than it used to be?
I think we're making headway, which is a good thing. I know that locally in the Fox Valley, with you know the advanced care planning partnership that we have, and the activities that Bobby Thompson, our executive director, helps volunteers in our various agencies and organizations work on, it is becoming less taboo to talk about death and to talk about planning. And so I think people are becoming increasingly more comfortable with it. But that being said, we have a long ways to go.
Yeah. And there are different types, as I understand it, and well, I know what I think, of advanced care directives.
Yes, there are, Larry.
Yep.
Wisconsin recognizes a couple of different varieties of advanced care directives. One is a healthcare power of attorney document where I can appoint, in my case, I've appointed my wife to step in and be my primary agent. If she can't act or isn't available, then one of our adult daughters is number two and the other adult daughter of ours is number three. So that allows an individual to, again, step in and advocate. However, some people don't have somebody that they can appoint to that role or nominate to that role. So in that case, sometimes it's better to do what's called a declaration of physicians or a living will. And that's a document that basically directs the doctors and the medical providers what to do or not to do under certain very specific situations.
Yeah. So the living will... So you're kind of doing that. You may be doing that yourself ahead of time so that when the time comes, your wishes are known.
That would be for somebody who doesn't really have someone that they can appoint as their decision maker. So both of these types of directives need to be done in advance. It's important to realize it's always too soon until it's too late. And if I slip and hit my head and I have a brain injury, it's too late for me to do an advance directive. We're going to go through the court supervised guardianship process.
Dr. Lee Vogel and attorney Ben Adams, our guest today, as we talk advanced directives, and invite you to join in. The number to call 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Diane in Barneveld has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Diane.
And we're in our mid-70s right now, and we're starting to wonder if there are any good reasons that we should sign a marriage document. We do have our advance directives. We do have our mortgages and our bank accounts accessible to both people. So we don't know if there are any good reasons for us to get married or not.
Well,
that sounds like a question for me, Larry. It's important for them to have their advance directives, authorizing perhaps each other or even separate family members to step in. And the fact that they have some things titled jointly may allow them to take some actions independent of each other. But it also may be that certain joint relationships need two people to be able to transact business. And if one of them is incapacitated, the other one might not be able to act by themselves. So I would suggest that they really need to get together and go see either an elder law and special needs attorney like I used to be, or an estate planning attorney in their area who could answer their questions and there are certain advantages, but also certain obligations for married couples that single people don't have. And that's the sort of thing that a good attorney can help them decide.
Yeah. And just as an aside, I've worked with an elder law attorney in the case of a couple of my, a sister and brother, and I find her very, very helpful in going through this whole process, not only for advanced directives, but for a whole host of other things that she was, because of her background in elder law, was really able to be very, very helpful. So I liked your comment about someone who is used to, specify themselves as an elder law attorney. Certainly others can help, but I've certainly found great help myself. So anybody, I wonder what age, when I was 20 years old, that would have been the last thing in my mind.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to step into this one.
Yeah.
That's such a great question, because we tend to think that these advanced directives are meant for people who are suffering from chronic disease or are older or advanced in age. But, when you think about it, any of us can walk out the door, and as young adults, 18 and through the age of 26, our brains are wired to be a little bit more impulsive. We do higher risk kinds of activities, perhaps, in terms of sports and other adventure activities. And in a moment, your life can change and you need somebody to be able to help make decisions for you. And so that, I think once you're an adult, that's a really great time. And Ben, maybe you can talk about our focus on that.
Yes. Thanks, Lee. It really is important. We have in the Fox Valley made inroads into being able to present programs to the senior class from Menasha High School, for example, this year and several years prior, alerting them to the fact that advanced directives might be very helpful, not only for them as they turn 18, and go off to college, but to their parents' benefit as well.
Yeah, that's great. Talk a little bit more about the work that you've done in those situations. It sounds like you folks are really on top of things where you are in the Fox Valley.
Well, Lee and I and many other volunteers in the communities here have been doing this. Larry, this is our 25th year of trying to promote the idea that people need to work on their advanced directives. And I would like to say at this point that you don't need a lawyer to do your healthcare directive. There are tremendously good resources locally for everybody who lives in Wisconsin. And after the show on your homepage for the show, people can take a look at a document that we update every year statewide for local community resources to do healthcare advanced planning. And it's a very helpful document, so you can locate somebody in any area of the state who can help you begin and complete this process.
Hmm. Kay in Madison has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I had an advanced directive, and the person that I had as my number one person has died, unfortunately, and she was so reliable. Everybody had her listed as their number one person, so I have to pick someone else. And I've just been hesitating, but I know I need to do it. And I did ask one of my other sisters if she would be willing, and she said yes, but it's like a matter of me putting it in writing and just talking with her about my wishes. She knows about the health care scene, which I think is important. And I just, like I say, I've been procrastinating on doing this, but I know I need to do it.
Yeah. Well, so let's get some comments, because there's a couple of different things going on, I think, in your statement there, Kay. Ben, maybe start with you, then I'm going to go to Lee.
Sure. Kay, that's a really great point. One of the important things when you make a directive is if you've got more than one person that you could pick, you can have a primary and then a backup person. And hopefully the document you did, even though your first person has passed, you do have somebody else on there as an alternate. But, you know, I think talking to your sister and then maybe connecting with your healthcare system, because every healthcare system in the state has people who can help you with advanced directives and advanced care planning. So that's one of the places to go. Those services are free. They'll be sure that you complete the document. They have the document on their website. And also, Larry, you're going to have after the show a free download of a really good advanced care planning guide put out by the State Bar of Wisconsin. That'll be free for another week for people who'd like to download it and then print a copy. And that really will complete would allow somebody like Kay to get this all set too.
Yeah, we may already have it up. Clara or Joel may already have. Anyway, go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry in today's program, and you're going to find it within the comments about the program. So very important information as we talk with Dr. Lee Vogel and Ben Adams. Lee, anything to add to what Ben had to say?
Well, I just want to say that was our caller just was a wonderful example of somebody who's being thoughtful about this in many ways. I mean, she said the choice she originally had knew her wishes. You know, her sister knows her wishes. Yes, it is a bonus if somebody understands health care or they understand your health. So she's had the conversation. She thought about it. She made the directive. And then she's doing something that we encourage everybody to do, is there are points in our lives that repeatedly we should rethink our directive, not only in terms of our wishes and do they make sense, but in terms of the agent that we've chosen for some reason. So there's, you know, yearly in the preventive evaluation with your doctor, if your health changes, rethink it if somebody close to you dies, and certainly if it's your agent, if there's a divorce or a change in a partner, all of those things come into play.
Dr. Lee Vogel and attorney Ben Adams, our guest today as we talk advanced directives. Clara Neipert is our producer today. Joel Patenhod, our on-air producer, and our technical director, Jeff Robbins. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR. Talking advanced directives with attorney Ben Adams, who is a founding volunteer member of the Fox Valley Advanced Planning Partnership, and as well, our guest, Dr. Lee Vogel, Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health and Associate Professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. She and Ben both are founding members of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Jeremy in Mineral Point has something. Let's go there. Hi, Jeremy.
How y'all doing? I was just thinking about like my work of social work and working in highly local long-term care facilities. And I think about the nurses and physicians who work really closely together to kind of like be informed, share information, and make decisions on behalf of folks who don't have advanced directives in place. And something to consider that I consider even at my young age is that, you know, the realities of our healthcare system, these nurses are still, and the physicians are still, overworked, oftentimes underpaid and under resources, especially in your small rural communities. And so sometimes, like, we would like to think that physicians and nurses are making good judgments from good places. But what I observe locally is that nurses and physicians are making decisions from a place of fatigue, from tired, from overwork, overpaid. You know what I mean? And their minds are like just lost in the sauce and just really mixed up. And so that's just something to consider, is like, consider other family members, reach back out, reconnect with those that you've lost contact with, and like cement those relationships, because I've seen it up and close, you know, up close and personal, and it gets really nasty out there.
Hmm. Jeremy, thanks. Dr. Lee Vogel, comment.
Yes, I appreciate Jeremy's perspective. Certainly after COVID, there's a lot of fatigue on the part of nurses and doctors. I'd like to think that all of us are trying to do things that come from goodwill and using our expertise. There's lots that influences that. People have ideologies. You really don't want doctors and nurses making decisions for you without understanding your wishes. And so it's absolutely critical that we all have an advance directive talking at a younger age. But when you think about traveling through, a situation where you're living in an assisted living facility or long-term care, as Jeremy was talking about, there's lots of day-to-day things happen. It isn't only about end of life. It's like, what kind of aggressive care might be helpful to you and what might be harmful. And some people, really have very serious thoughts about what they would want. So expressing it, codifying it in a document, making sure that's available, and that empowers your family as well.
Joni emailed to ask, if you already have a healthcare advance directive in place, do you also need a living will? What's the difference? Ben, maybe start with you.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. That's a good question being asked. As an elder law and special needs attorney, I normally did not do both documents for the same client. I felt that the healthcare power of attorney naming an agent, and then if I had conversations with that agent, so they understood my values relating to healthcare and to life, that I would be better off just having an informed advocate who could stand in my shoes when I could no longer speak for myself and negotiate through the healthcare system. But if somebody doesn't have that, that's where the living will makes sense. And there are also a lot of attorneys who say you should do both documents, as long as they both express the same elements of your wishes. There's no harm in the living will, but you don't want to have a living will that says one thing and a healthcare power of attorney that indicates something different.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back to the prior caller, Jeremy, just for a second. Again, I think the big concept is if you can't speak for yourself and you have a healthcare agent who can act because you have an advance directive, they can be your advocate. They can speak for you. They can be the squeaky wheel that gets you the level of care or the attention that you need. And if you don't have that in place, then basically people will try to make the best decisions for you that they can. But if they're overworked and stressed and worn out through COVID, that can lead to some questionable decisions sometime, I expect. And you also have the dissension among your friends and family sometimes when they don't understand your wishes, as we've mentioned.
Yeah. Doug in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Doug. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've got a question about what a person needs to do in an advance directive to ensure that a desire to die at home is honored by a hospital. We have an advance directive. We have two power of attorneys. Ours says that we want to die at home. However, our good friend and neighbor, who also has an identical advance directive, went into the hospital. She asked to be her children, who were her power of attorneys, asked her to be released to her home to die at home. This is a Madison hospital, and I won't name it. It's a very good hospital, but it was an issue. The hospital said no. She could only be released to a rehab facility. They said they tried to get hospice care for her at home, but unfortunately her condition was a long-term progressive thing and hospice care couldn't take her immediately. So her advance directive said die at home. Her power of attorney said please release her. The hospital said we will not. And she died in the hospital.
Well, I mean, we could probably hear from both of our guests. Dr. Lee Vogel, we'll start with you, then go to Ben.
Yes, that's unfortunate. And I think that it's extremely double unfortunate because this person, and you are relaying that you believe you've done everything, she did everything possible that she could to have somebody advocate for her. I do think that in circumstances where there's a disagreement like this, it is worthwhile to ask for an ethics committee consultation or an ethics team consultation. Every hospital is required to have one, and it's a really great resource to hear all sides, to weigh in on the wishes, and oftentimes try to find a path forward that's helpful.
Ben, anything to add there?
A little bit. I echo what Lee says about the ethics committee process at a hospital. It's a process where they bring in a group of people, not all of whom are within the medical system, to basically see all sides of an issue, and oftentimes it's where different opinions have been expressed, and there has to be an outcome that hopefully can be agreed on. That would have been a good process to try to go through that might have helped this. The other is, you know, and again, we can't tell what the caller's neighbors or friends' exact fact situation was. But again, having a directive with an advocate named who can be pretty assertive and say, no, this is really what we're going to do, you know, maybe that would have made a difference.
Yeah.
One additional thing as well is that I value everybody having a primary care physician. And one of the difficulties is that many times your family physician or your internist that you see in the ambulatory care setting are not seeing you in the hospital, but they can still be relied on as an advocate, I hope. And so, and I think for the caller to really sit with your family doctor and have a plan about that, you know, and even a written out plan where that person will be an advocate for you.
Yeah, another very good point. Doug, I hope that helps. Thank you. Just to go along with this, Tom from Green Bay called, couldn't stay with us, but wonders about DNR or do not resuscitate. Are those requests really honored? They heard they are not honored. And saw something like that on a Chicago Med show where a DNR was, you know, is of course it's just a show, but are they honored?
DNRs? Well, you know, Larry, everybody on a TV medical show recovers, don't they? You know, and after they've been resuscitated that night, they go dancing the next night, which is absolutely not reality.
Right.
And we need to understand that. But a do not resuscitation order, and Lee should speak to this as well, is not an advanced directive. It's a medical order written by a doctor that says, basically, in my language, it says I don't have to be resuscitated if my heart stops. And so in order for us to have that in Wisconsin, we need to get the order through a doctor. The doctor has to agree that it's appropriate for us, given our situation and our health situation. But the doctor and I are basically saying CPR will not help you. It will not help you restore to the quality of life you had before that heart attack. Or before you, so that's the issue, and it will be honored outside the hospital. It may be different when you go into the hospital if you had one of those for the community, but those are available.
Yes, and to ensure that it's honored outside the hospital, we have a process, legal process, and a clinical process in Wisconsin where there is a form that is a do not resuscitate form that in the clinic is completed between the patient and the doctor and signed by both, and then there are bracelets so that you're wearing a legally sanctioned bracelet that indicates do not resuscitate. The trouble with those bracelets is that they do have to be replaced repeatedly, and they're similar to the plastic bracelets you wear in the hospital, and they're not attractive. So there is what's called a sticky J form. It's one company that the DNR bracelet that is made of metal, and it is honored by paramedics. And Ben is right. When you get to the hospital, they will honor that if you've got that on it. But if you're admitted to the hospital, they will use that as a point of discussion if you're able to discuss and so that order is carried out.
Let's turn to Keith in Edgar, Wisconsin. Hi, Keith.
Hello. I don't know if I can explain this real well, but do these directives include things like percentages, as in something has happened to you, you're in the hospital? What are the odds of you getting better? What are the odds of you staying the same in the future or getting worse? And, you know, that can make a big difference in what you decide to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that I think I'm following you on that, Keith. Ben, you start with you.
Well, Keith, that's a great question. I've never been a big fan of percentages in terms of, well, if it's 65%, we can do it, but if it's 66 or 64, you can't. You know, I'd rather have a statement of my values. And I guess this is where you also would be going to your agent, the person that you would want to step in for you if you could no longer speak for yourself, so that they understand how you would make that decision. You know, doctors, Lee Vogel may be the exception, but doctors generally can't come to me and say, if we do this, I can guarantee this will be the exact result you can expect. And so anything has benefits that it will bring you and burdens that it may also give you along the way. And you have to balance those and then make a choice about what course of treatment to follow.
Yeah. Lee?
Yeah. You know, I wish that we worked in a world where we had so much information in advance and specific to an individual in a specific situation that we could use percentages easily. We try as doctors to understand the science, to be able to say, well, we know that these sorts of treatments in general applied from a study with, you know, thousands of people might have a particular percentage around something, and that's difficult. I think there are some guidelines when it comes to do not resuscitate and certain illnesses where we might be able to say at a certain age and with this accumulation of conditions and where a person is now. Like if your heart and your breathing stops, if you're at your moment of dying and it could be peaceful and somebody sees it and interrupts it, if the paramedics aren't restoring your heart rhythm within 5 minutes, you know, you're unlikely to live. So we can do some of those things, but more importantly, it's having that conversation with your doctor and allowing somebody, like Ben says, your decision maker, to be able to just do the best job they can, knowing your values and wishes, and then probing the physician, like, well, after this treatment, what's life going to be like? Your best experience, and if you can define for your person who's making the decision for you under what circumstances you wouldn't want to be, you know, alive. And not that people would invoke your euthanasia, but if you had a stroke and you didn't know where you were and you couldn't swallow and you couldn't move and you were going to be living in a nursing home, if that's a life that you wouldn't want and you could allow nature to take its course, then those are the kinds of definitions that might be useful and helpful without percentages.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, Larry, if I could, I'd give a recommendation again for the free download of the healthcare planning guide from the State Bar of Wisconsin that you'll have in your program notes. It's called A Gift to Your Family. It has information about DNR bracelets, which was one of the questions we had earlier. It has a section about questions that you might use to discuss your healthcare values with your agents and other family members. It has information about the healthcare living will document, as well as the healthcare advanced directive power of attorney document. So I think, you know, if somebody's looking for a way to really get into this subject and figure out how to make it work for me and how to take action and set up somebody who can advocate for me or answer questions and know me well enough to make a decision if I can't, that's a really good way to start.
Yeah, and free copies, if you go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry and go to today's date, and within the comments description of the show, you will find the links that you need to download that information, or at the very least, take a look and go through it. If you can't download it, take a look at it. You should be able to download it, but if you can't, you'll be able to get a lot of the information you need. Keith, thanks again. Connie in Portage, hi.
Hi, good morning, Larry. I'm a little bit confused. I'm a retired registered nurse, and in the 80s, we were informed that the patient had the right to leave the hospital anytime they wanted. The hospital had no authority whatsoever over the patient. And now, has that changed so much now that now the hospital can tell you when you can leave? I'm really confused. If that's the case, then why have a directive? I just like an answer.
Yeah. Well, Ben, we'll go to you.
Again, I think you're right. If I'm able to make my own decisions, I have the right to check myself out of the hospital. I don't think there's any question about that. I think the question may arise if there's some question about whether I am decisional or not. And you know, that could be a point of contention. So again, that goes back to the specific facts of one of the callers' questions, and we don't know what those facts were. But that's a very important clarification that, you know, if you're decisional, you do have the right to check yourself out. I believe I'm right. Lee, am I not?
Yes, if you can make your own decisions, you do have the right to check yourself out. And my observation is that it's not at all common that a hospital doesn't allow somebody to leave or check themselves out, especially if they're decisional and they're mentally well and not at risk for harming themselves or others. I think the other thing that comes into place is, let's say that I was in the hospital and very, very debilitated, wanting to go home to my own home, had nobody to take care of me, and the ethics of a hospital and a doctor sort of trying to work through, do we just drop somebody off at their door when they can't take care of themselves? So there are some unusual circumstances because people want to do good care. But the caller's right. It still is somebody's right to leave the hospital and make their own decisions.
Connie, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. And boy, here we are out of time. And I want to thank you both very much for being with us today, and urge everybody to go to our page, ideas@wpr.org/Larry, and go to the comments section of today's date, the description of the show, and you're going to find the links there. You guys are always great to be able to talk with you. You're doing wonderful work, and during this week and every week, appreciate it very much. Thanks, Ben. Thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you so much.
Ben Adams, attorney, a founding volunteer member of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership, and Dr. Lee Vogel, executive director of Mosaic Family Health, emeritus director of the board of directors of, Ben is emeritus director of the board of directors of the Wisconsin chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. It's great to have both of them with us today, and I'm certain we'll be talking about this down the road. And kind of to go along with the first show, we're going to talk about, once you get to be 65 years old, you're going to need to sign up for Medicare. And believe me, you're going to need to sign up for it. And how do you do that? And what are the steps involved? And what are the upsides and downsides? We'll hear about that next from our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Whether you're retired or not, when you turn 65, you need to sign up for Medicare. And next up, we talk with a couple of experts about what you need to know. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio. With us from the Board of Aging and Long-Term Care Medigap Helpline Services. We have Supervisor Vicki Buchholz. Vicki, welcome. Thanks for joining in.
Thank you very much, Larry. It's an honor to come and speak for you today.
Well, it's great to have you with us, Vicki. And we also have lead counselor, Nick Lutz. Nick, welcome to you. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to sharing as much information as we can with your listeners.
Well, we're certainly have a lot to cover here. We're going to ask you guys about some of the decisions that people need to make. And as you listen, how do you go through this whole process? Supplemental plans, what you need to know to start the process, what questions to have about Medicare. And if you're on Medicare already, you may have some questions too. And I hope you join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Vicki, let's just start with you about the board. What does the Board of Aging and Long-Term Care oversee?
Okay, the Board on Aging and Long-Term Care, BOLTEC for short, we are a state agency with the Department of Administration. We are an advocacy agency. The Ombudsman Program and the Volunteer Ombuds Program is housed in this agency, where they provide support and advocacy for consumers of long-term care services, for those frail people who may be in a nursing home or receiving home health services, and they need some assistance. So we've got the Ombudsman Programs, and we also have the Medigap Helpline, which includes not only the main helpline, but also a prescription drug helpline to help with Part D and understanding how to pick the best option for you there.
Yeah, Nick, so, maybe you can talk a bit more about that Medigap helpline.
Yeah, so our helpline here is designed to assist Medicare beneficiaries, whether they're looking to start Medicare or already have, select their coverage and weigh what their options are, whether that be, like you said, a Medicare supplement policy, a Medicare Advantage plan, a Medicare drug plan, or some kind of employer or retiree coverage.
So when should you start the process of signing up for Medicare? Okay, you have to sign up when you're first. Maybe why do you have to sign up for Medicare?
Well, actually, age 65 is the first date that majority of people are eligible for Medicare. If they become disabled prior to that, they're eligible for Medicare at that point, or if they end up on kidney disease or on kidney dialysis. But we've got a set of set questions we ask people if they're covered by an active employer plan, still working, or their spouse is still working, they may be able to hold off signing up for Medicare, or they may only take part of Medicare. And those are a lot of questions that we first work with beneficiaries on to help them decide before we go into, now let's see what else you want with Medicare. So you're correct that it's become very complex nowadays.
Yeah, and you could, I have a friend who passed away who had children who were, you know, 4 and 6, something like that. And there were actually, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I didn't really go into the everything with the other partner, but I'm pretty sure they were eligible to receive benefits.
The children were eligible to receive Social Security survivor's benefits. That has nothing to do with Medicare. Medicare itself, Social Security does review the eligibility, but it is only by disability, by age 65, or kidney dialysis that a person can actually begin Medicare. Otherwise, we look at other options for family members and such.
I'm glad you cleared that up. So survivor benefits is something different,
but that's something, the money.
Yeah, but also something that you folks, if somebody came to you in that sort of situation, you'd be able to point them in the right directions.
Right. We do a lot of referrals back to Social Security to determine what are other options they can get with regard to those benefits. But for the gentleman, if he passed and he was on disability, it is possible that he had been on disability for 24 months to be able to start Medicare.
Makes sense. Ray and Delavan has a comment or question. Let's go there. Hi, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Yes. My question is, my wife just recently got approved for Social Security disability, and now we're wondering if she qualifies for any Medicaid or Medicare benefits, and if she does, who would we contact to get things started?
Yeah. Well, Nick, we haven't heard from you for a minute. Let's go to you. Hi, Nick.
Yeah. So the first thing I would recommend is giving us a call here at the Medigap Helpline to help navigate that specific situation. And beyond that, it's going to depend on whether or not she would be eligible for Medicare would be the first question. And that is something that's determined by the Social Security Administration. And there can be some waiting periods, that 24-month waiting period that Vicki mentioned, to get your Medicare benefits. And if you determine that you're going to be receiving those Medicare benefits, that's also going to change eligibilities for Medicaid programs. So there's lots of questions that we can help you answer over here at our helpline. If you want to give us a call, I believe our number will be listed in the show description, Larry, is that correct?
Yeah, but let's give it here and now too. We'll list it for sure. But
our toll-free number is 1-800-242-1060. That is the Medigap helpline. It's on the back of the Medicare and You book.
So 1-800-242-1060.
Correct.
I got that right? Okay. Ray, there you go. You're going to get some very specific answers to your case for sure from there. But basically, Ray's going to get some help when he...
Yes.
That when he...
Yes,
when
we would definitely help him understand options now as well as later, and the types.
Where do you go to sign up, by the way, for Medicare? Let's say I'm 65. You need to sign up. Where do I go to sign up?
Well, you would contact the Social Security Administration. If you, however, had already signed up for early retirement benefits, then your Medicare will start automatically at age 65. So for people who have already signed up for their money benefits, their monthly benefits, then their Medicare will start automatically. It's those people who are delaying signing up for Social Security because their full retirement age has been offset now to almost 67. Those are the people that may still want to sign up for Medicare for age 65. And it's contact the Social Security Administration, whether online, whether you call them, or you visit your local Social Security office.
So the different ways to go about doing it, for sure. So, and if, you know, as if I show up and they start asking me for different kinds of information, oh, I didn't bring that maybe. I mean, are there a lot of things, Nick, that you need to have?
You know, that's a question for Social Security that's going to depend on your situation. Typically, when I'm speaking with a caller that needs to start Medicare, I'll recommend they start by calling Social Security because that can typically be the easiest way for that beneficiary to sign up for Medicare. Also, the online portal, if you have the ability to, is pretty straightforward, I believe. I haven't signed up for Medicare myself, so I can just speak to others' experiences.
Yeah, but I mean, there's nothing that you wouldn't have in your on your driver's license or whatever in terms of information that would be something you probably would know off the top of your head, I would think. Yeah,
that's correct.
You're not okay. And James in Ironwood, Michigan, has a question for us. And James, we'll get to that. I hope you'll hold on. We're talking with Vicki Buchholz, who is the with the Board of Aging and Long-Term Care Medicap Helpline. Vicki's the supervisor, and the lead counselor is Nick Lutz. And we're going to be talking some more. We're going to get James's question from Ironwood, Michigan. We'll get Gary's from Madison. And we'll get yours, too. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on WPR. And then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about Medicare on the show today. With us from the Board of Aging and Long-Term Care Medigap Helpline Services, our supervisor, Vicki Buchholz, and lead counselor, Nick Lutz. Questions for them? Maybe you're a little confused about signing up for Medicare. You have questions about supplemental plans? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Our lines are filled right now. You could also email us to ideas@wpr.org. James in Ironwood, Michigan's been waiting a bit. James, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you, Larry. See, I've been bothered with, for the last 3 months or more, of calls, anywhere from 3 to 15 calls a day, and I keep getting them, even on Sundays sometimes. I'm wondering, somebody told me that it's happening all across the country. Now, is Medicare paying people to fish for calls like that, or is it the Advantage companies?
So phishing calls to sign up for Medicare. Vicki, you probably heard this before.
Definitely. Medicare does not reach out to people directly. So beneficiaries will not get a phone call from Medicare itself. What you're probably getting are different agents reaching out to try to offer you Medicare supplement policies, Medicare Advantage plan. We just went through the last 3 months from January through March, the Medicare Advantage open enrollment window, which that also allows the agents to start reaching out and making contact with people. Marketing rules are going to get tougher, however, that if you feel that this is not something you want, you do have a right to file a complaint against any of those contacts that continually contact you, because that is not something that should be occurring.
No, and if it's on your cell phone, James, the problem is the numbers change all the time, but you can go in and block at least the ones that are calling you that you don't want to hear from anymore. I'd block them so they can't get in. At least I can do that on my phone. And you were going to add something, Vicki.
Yes, what he can also do, he's in Michigan. Every state has what's called a SHIP program, because the Medigap Helpline, we're part of the Wisconsin SHIP, State Health Insurance Program. On the back of your Medicare new book, James, you should have the Michigan number of the Michigan SHIP. Otherwise, give us a call and we'll be able to get that for you.
And that number to call, is it 800 242-1060?
Yes.
1-800-242-1060 or 1060. Thanks for that question. Gary in Madison, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Yes. My question, I guess, is a bit more about Social Security. Is those questions being answered?
Well, what's your question? And we'll see if we might come up with an answer.
Okay. I'm turning 70 in October. I'm on Medicare. I work full time. And can I start receiving my Social Security when I'm 70 and get the full benefit and keep working?
Your full retirement age probably was at age 65. Okay, once you reach your Social Security full retirement age, then yes, you can keep working and get your Social Security benefits, and you will not lose any of those Social Security benefits. I would suggest that you contact Social Security so that they could explain that to you better and they could inform you when you had your full retirement age. Okay? Because that's the magic date.
That's the magic
number. Mine was 66 and a half. So I'm at my full retirement age. So
there you go, yep. Gary. You want to check that out, but it could well be that you're at your full retirement age at 70 yep. years of age, for sure. Nick's nodding in agreement as well. So there you go, Gary. Thank you. Lori in Beaver Dam, your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I want a contrast between the advantages and disadvantages between traditional Medicare and Advantage plans. When I signed up for Medicare, I'm 69. At age 65, it was explained to me that the advantages were that if you're an otherwise healthy person, you get a lower rate than Advantage plan, but then if you become ill, it's difficult for you. You might not be able to get back into traditional Medicare, which provides you with more options for care. It doesn't limit your choices. Is that correct?
I think, Laura, you've got that pretty well. They did explain it to you very well. Original Medicare, it's by itself, has a lot of out-of-pocket costs, and there's no limit to their out-of-pocket. So a lot of people will purchase a Medicare supplement or a Medigap policy in order to pay the out-of-pocket. And with majority of Medigap policies, you've got freedom of choice. You can go to any provider anywhere in the United States. As long as they take Medicare, you've got coverage. A Medicare Advantage plan, however, is lower premium. However, there are out-of-pocket copays for people. So if you're healthy, you could save a boatload of money with the Advantage plan. But the drawback is, as people get older, they start developing health issues. That's when they're going to find their out-of-pocket costs could go up with the Advantage plan. Yes, you could change Advantage plans every year during the annual enrollment period. However, the maximum out-of-pockets for the Advantage plans, you really need to understand that, because that's a person's risk for that healthcare cost. And what works for one may not work for another. Call us and we can help you figure that out.
Yeah. Lori, thank you so much for calling. So within the traditional Medicare, you're going to spend more money versus the Advantage plan.
Only yes. If you're you have to pay the Part B premium, you have to have Medicare A and B before you can enroll into an Advantage plan. So you're paying that Part B premium anyway. The premium for that Advantage plan, the added premium may be low or no even. You may not have a premium, but you will have copayments for just about every medical service you use. That's where the cost comes in.
Got it. Carmen in Twin Lakes, we'll go to you now. Hi, Carmen.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm 77, I'm on Medicare, and I have a Medicare supplement through AARP, and it's a Plan G. But I keep getting, I'm not computer competent, or I don't know how to do it, and I keep getting things on my telephone about free or low-cost dental implants for seniors, and I also get stuff for like a prepaid card, and they advertise it. You can use it at Target or Walmart, you know, $3,000, $1,500. Is any of that true, or is that all scam stuff?
And I think he was talking about food cards for seniors. You can use at grocery stores and so forth as well. Nick, get you involved here.
Yeah, so those are likely some marketing materials for Medicare Advantage plans, which Vicki mentioned earlier, are offering more of these extra benefits outside of your health insurance coverage. So they're trying to advertise that dental insurance or those food cards to appeal to you to try to switch you into a Medicare Advantage plan. However, if you're happy with your coverage, you definitely don't have to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan. And if you want to talk about the different options available, it would be great to give us a call at our number, 1-800-242-1060. But yeah, those are likely just advertisements you're receiving from Medicare Advantage plans.
Carmen, thank you for calling. Bob and Franklin, we'll go to you next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My brother and I are both on Medicare. I've got a supplement. He's got a Medicare Complete Advantage plan. And I would like to know if anybody rates these plans so you can kind of pick through them and figure out who is the best. And in his case, I'd like to know, can he switch back to regular Medicare and a supplement?
Okay. First, with the Medicare supplemental policy, yes, a lot of these policies have been rated. You could reach out to the Office Commissioner of Insurance, and they do have more details and information on individual supplements. But one thing I do know with our commissioner's office is they do make sure that supplemental policies cover what they're supposed to. They're pretty much identical when you look at supplements. The only difference you'll see is premium rates, because companies assess their premiums based upon what their costs are. As for your brother, if he's been in the Advantage plan less than 1 year, he may have what's called a trial period that we can go back to original Medicare and he can get a supplemental policy. Otherwise, anytime during the annual enrollment, he can go back to original Medicare. He has that right. He can always go back. However, to get a supplemental policy, he may be subject to health underwriting. So it would depend upon his health. So those are questions, and that's the trick with Advantage plans is, can I go back?
Yeah.
There's no guarantees.
No guarantees. Bob, thank you so much for calling. You can join in too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Eve emailed to say there are 69 still working at UW-Madison. They have good health insurance, but was told at age 65 they need to contact Medicare and decline coverage at that time. Is that necessary?
If her or her spouse are receiving Social Security money benefits, as I said earlier, it's automatic. Now, they cannot decline Part A because they've probably earned it premium free, but Part B they can waive until such time as they retire. Once they retire from their employer, that's when they do need to contact Social Security to make sure they're signing up for Part B so that they have Medicare that covers primary. So, but yes, they can wait. They can waive it. Some people, if they're not getting their Social Security, will not take Medicare at all. But some will still take Part A because it's premium free.
Bill in Madison, we'll give you a chance to join in. Bill, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. Medicare is ridiculous. Stay off of it. Stay away from it. Stay away from it. It costs me $12,000 a year. I am so far in debt. I'm on disability, and the government forced me onto Medicare. I don't qualify for Medicaid because they even took my $2,000 grave as property assets. If I have more than $2,000, I'm 61, and so I've been all over the place. It's my seizure medications. It costs me $4,000 a year on Medicare. If I don't have the brand name, I have three seizures a day. Period. I've had epilepsy for 24 years, and it's just been an absolute nightmare. And I can't say enough. I was on Obamacare, and I wish that the government would let me go back to Obamacare. That was about $6,000 a year. And I've taught Medigap, one Medicare Advantage plan, said $7,000 for my, even with my doctors. For a while there with my doctors, authorization and override, it was $4,000 a year. I finally found some assistance to bring that down through a program with the manufacturer, but it took a long time, and I hate it.
Okay, well, you've given us your opinion on that one, Bill. And Vicki, you may have heard this before. I mean, how do you respond?
I would like to know who originally helped you understand Medicare itself to find out what option works for you. We know that once a person starts Social Security disability, Medicare is automatic. You cannot turn it down. And therefore, the marketplace goes away because they're not designed to work together. So I understand that part of it. Prescription costs are very costly for a lot of people, and Nick works with a lot of our drug programs right now, and I bet you he's got some options or some ideas to help with prescription costs.
Yeah.
That if you're paying that much for your medications, we need to do a plan finder to identify a better plan, as well as look at some pharmaceutical programs that's got patient assistance programs. So, but there's eligibilities for all of that.
Nick,
so I understand your frustration, but there could be some help out there.
Nick, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate, Bill, that I understand your frustration with the exorbitant costs of prescription drugs. We get quite a few calls about that. And one of the things I wanted to share is that Medicare is changing for 2025. There's going to be a $2,000 out-of-pocket cap for prescription drugs for any beneficiary that has Medicare prescription drug coverage, whether that be from a Medicare Part D plan or from a Medicare Advantage plan with prescription drug coverage. And that $2,000 cap is likely going to help with the cost of those prescription drugs you need. Also, as Vicki mentioned, I would encourage you to give us a call and we can look at your eligibility for some other prescription assistance programs that might be available.
And that's 1-800-242-1060, 1-800-242-1060. We'll post that number too on our program today. So it'll be on ideas at WPR.org/Larry under today's date. Yeah, you'll find it. Greg, who's on Highway 94. Hi, Greg.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Hopefully it's not too noisy. Quickly, my question is this, is that I was born with a disability. I'm dyslexic. So my income has been very low through my life. I am now 64 years old. And what I'm inquiring about is that I've received a letter from Social Security telling me what my benefits will be, of course, at different ages. I plan to work as long as I can, hopefully up to 70 or even longer. But I have learned that my monthly income, or not income, but my monthly Social Security would be $800 or $900 a month only at this point today. And excuse me, what worries me is that Medicare, from what I've been reading or learning to, is that this would take almost a third of my income. I just want to get an idea of what would I expect the Medicare will take from my Social Security each month.
All right. Thank you, Greg, for calling. Let's go to Vicki.
First off, when you become eligible for Medicare, they do look at income and assets through Medicaid to determine what type of assistance you're entitled to. Based upon income alone, it sounds like you may be eligible for supplemental security income, which would automatically give you full Medicaid benefits, and that will wrap around with Medicare, and they would also pay that Part B premium for you. So, but it all depends upon what you have for assets, or if you have a disability determination through Social Security, there may be programs now that could assist as well. So those are things that give us a call again. I hate to keep reiterating that, but give us a call and we can look at all those individual options for different beneficiaries.
So, and yeah, Nick, you were going to add in there?
I don't have too much to add, just that, again, with these individual situation-specific calls, that is what our counselors here at the Medigap Helpline are for, to help you navigate your individual situation with regards to your Medicare insurance coverage and needs.
And again, that's 1-800-242-1060. That's the number. Susan emailed to say they were surprised to find out their brand name drugs are better covered if they are not on an Advantage plan. Nick.
Yeah. So when it comes to drug coverage, each Medicare prescription drug plan, whether that's a Medicare Advantage plan or a standalone drug plan, have different what's called drug plan formularies. So those are the drugs that the plan will cover. And in some cases, yes, brand name drugs are more likely to be covered or might be less expensive than even generic alternatives. And that's a real shift that we see beneficiaries experience when they transition from some kind of employer coverage to Medicare. The drug plans are a major change.
We are out of time. Great questions. Again, that number for that specific information, 1-800-242-1060. And with us from the Board of Aging and Long-Term Care Medigap Helpline, Supervisor Vicki Buchholz and Lead Counselor Nick Lutz. Lots of questions, and thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it very much. Stay with us. Lots more in store on WPR. I'm Larry Mueller.